We're 88.5 KCSN. Jim Nelson here. We're actually sitting backstage, deep backstage at the Shrine Auditorium downtown. We're hanging out with the Avett brothers. We got Scott and we got Seth and Bob and Joe all hanging out with us backstage tonight, and we're happy to have you all here. Thank you so much for taking a few minutes to talk with us.
Our pleasure, Jim.
We are now a couple things. I understand that there's a Rolling Stone writer out on the road with you guys. I'd like to talk about that in a moment. And also your eighth full-length studio album, Magpie and the Dandelion, coming out this Tuesday for the Avett brothers. And Scott, I'm going to start with you. Magpie and the Dandelion is being referred to as a companion album to last year's CD, The Carpenter. How so is it a companion?
Well, it's a companion first because it was recorded at a similar time together as a group of songs that we drew from to make The Carpenter. Not leftovers at all, but it was what was omitted when we were making The Carpenter, or sequencing for The Carpenter, and then added to and listened to and edited over and over and over.
So some of the songs, Seth, came from that same writing period and recording period, and some of them are new since The Carpenter then?
Yeah, well, the majority is from the same session.
I see.
We would refer to it as the Carpenter sessions, but yeah, the majority was made at the same time.
Definitely then a companion piece, sir. Makes sense. Yeah. And it's the third album in a row that you guys have made with Rick Rubin producing. I had a chance about 20 years ago to spend a few minutes with Rick in his home studio, just me and Steve Hockman from the LA Times, and he was playing us this music he was working on. Turns out it was the Johnny Cash album American Recordings that came out in 94. What I recall about that was Rick's childlike enthusiasm for the music. He was just over the top that he had a chance to play this for me and Steve Hockman. And I'm curious what's your takeaway from working with Rick? What do you like best about working with Rick Rubin?
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a big part of it right there. I mean, he wears it on his sleeve very clearly. Within the first few moments of sitting down with Rick with a stereo in the room, he just loves music. He loves it. He loves it to death. He loves talking about it, loves listening to it, and comes from it from a spiritual, emotional, aesthetic angle that doesn't have much to do with technicality, which matches really well with us, because I don't know that when we made that step of working with a producer, especially stepping into a realm where we were working with a producer of such renown, that we would have meshed well with someone that tried to get inside of the chords and say, no, try B minor instead of B major. Like that, I think that would have been sort of rubbed us wrong a little bit. I think it would rub me wrong a little bit. But Rick, he's like a professional music fan, you know, and that helps us in the studio a lot. He's just really a great person to bounce things off of and just hash it out and have a fun conversation about what's working, what isn't working. And there's a lot about Rick's natural vibe that mixes well with us, but that's a big part of it, is just him loving music. Like you say, a childlike love for music, which is very observable and noticeable.
I bet he would love to hear himself described as a professional music fan. That's an apt description. Bob, let's ask you a question here. In the last 13 years, the Avett brothers have released 15 either full-length albums, EPs, or live albums. And that's just the ones with the Avett brothers' name on them, because Seth has done a few things on his own under the name Darling. And you're always on the road, so what's the process for a band that's just constantly working to be able to manage getting all of those releases? You got the writing, you got the recording, and all the other stuff that goes along with it. What's that process like?
I think that the band is very goal-oriented, both collectively and as individuals. We're all very goal-oriented, and we're always working on something, be it a serious musical project, or just learning a new instrument, or reading a book and learning a new subject. We're all very, very involved with life, you know, and very enthusiastic about living. and we take life in, and we just love what we get to do for a living, and we feel very blessed in our trades, both personally and professionally. And it was always in the early days, when I say early days, I mean 2001 to 2009, there was almost an unspoken goal of having one release a year. Like it wasn't even spoken. It was just like, you know, we're going to record at least once a year. You know, be that Country Was, Carolina Jubilee, Mignonette, or the Gleam albums. We just did something a year. If we played a live show and the sound mixer gave us a copy of it and it sounded half decent to us, we released it. You know, it was just a matter of I think for Scott and Seth, clearing the catalog that was building up. Like their songs are constantly coming, and so, you know, you don't want them to just to back up, and you don't want songs to get lost and be lost forever. So you need to have these collections and releases and get them out to the public. And they were being written as quickly as we could put them out, you know. Then when we kind of started getting with the major labels, that process was just slowed down a little bit. Mm-hmm. But what's taken its place is demoing. And there are other ways to catalog songs and to collect songs and make sure ideas don't get swept under the rug. So to answer your question, the process is never ending.
It's a lot of writing in hotel rooms and recording on days off while you're on the road, that kind of stuff?
You know, or at home.
Yeah, I mean, we write at home a lot, but there's never like an... We just kind of feel out the... There's no like off limits time to like introduce a song or to be like, hey, check this out or whatever. I mean, it's just whenever it strikes you, whenever it hits you. And we try not to overwhelm ourselves because we get overwhelmed easily because there's a lot to get overwhelmed with. So
sure.
It's a good problem to have.
She's a rose, she's a queen, but she's staring at a magazine in the dark on that path where they doctor every photograph.
We're talking with the Yvette brothers. We're backstage at the Shrine Auditorium before their show. And Joe, I have a question for you. Recently, you guys were on with Jimmy Fallon. And one of the fun things he did with you guys was a little skit where he was selling a heavy metal album of you guys playing it. So my first question is, would you agree with me that your version of Iron Man is now the quintessential recording of that song?
You better agree with that, Joe.
Yeah, that's a trick question.
My arm's twisted here. I'm bound to, by say contract, no. To say...
Say no.
No.
All right, Ozzy, you're still safe. How does that come together? Does he come to you guys ahead of time, like right before the show, and say, you guys know how to play this song, let's work this skit up? Is that how that works out? Or
no, all of those went through writers on the show, so it wasn't an impromptu thing. I wish it was, but... Yeah, unfortunately, I don't think we're that funny.
Yeah, we opened the door to do something with them. You know, we said, well, let's whatever. We'll put a record out. Let's have some fun. We've been to Jimmy Fallon 7 times or 6 times, something like that. So, you know, we just said we're up for doing something. If you want to do a skit or whatever, that's what they brought. So,
y'all know what to expect of each other then going in.
Yeah.
Scott, I'm going to double back to you and talk about the idea of bluegrass and heavy metal. Now, you don't do either one of those specifically, but your rootsy Americana music has elements of hard rock in it at times, and that's not really something that you hear a lot. So I'm curious, how did you know it was okay to sort of blend those two disparate kinds of music into one sound?
Well, we didn't wonder if it was okay or not, and we didn't really talk about what we were as far as a type of band, a band with a genre label, bluegrass, metal, or anything else. And I do think when you look back to the 20s, someone like Charlie Poole, who lived a very crazy lifestyle as well as delivered a very intense style of playing in a trio of fiddle, banjo, and guitar. It's my opinion that those are some of the first punk rock pop artist, sort of like I shouldn't maybe say pop, but very punk rock, very edgy, very cutting, and I think we're part of an ever evolving process that goes on with people that probably have a country upbringing, an aesthetic of country, if not an upbringing, then an interest in the country aesthetic in music, and are affected obviously and appreciate many, many other types of music, be it hip-hop, rock, jazz, classical, anything else, and all those things are met. I used to think a lot about how the 60s and now were different, and you know, Dylan was what he was, and everybody sort of orbited around that when you think about the folk revival of the 60s, and you know, since then, so many things happened, from hardcore to hip-hop to you know, all these fusion genres and pop country and all these things that happened. And we were affected by them all along. The 80s happened and the 90s happened. And so we come out with this, we meaning us and many other musicians, part of something that is acoustic music that's been affected by quite a bit of non-acoustic music and pop culture. So I think it just kind of went through a process of reinventing itself, which is probably doing again right now.
Right.
You know, and
right.
We'll consistently do that.
Load the car and write the note. Grab your bag and grab your coat. Tell the ones that need to know. We are headed north.
We're talking with the Avett brothers here on 88.5 KCSN. Seth, when The Carpenter came out a year ago, it debuted on Billboard at number 4. I and Love and You had gone top 20 on the same chart. Things like that have put the Avett brothers in a position with, I would say, maybe Mumford & Sons as being at the forefront of the roots Americana music. And that allows you, or I think allows is the right word, to sort of open doors for this kind of music to get more mainstream attention. I mean, I think you and Mumford & Sons, for instance, are making banjo hip again.
Right.
What does that feel like to be sort of in that place where you're helping other people just by being as successful as you've been?
Well, if we are helping, it's a very lucky feeling. It's it ends up being a little bit of an afterthought, not because we're not not because we don't notice how fortunate or blessed we are to have some popularity or have some notoriety or whatever it is, but the focus is let's make great songs, let's make great records, and then we talked about this. We've talked about this a few times. Each era, you know, you look at the 80s and you think about the production and maybe some things about the production that you didn't like. Maybe you don't like the way the drums sounded and all the records that were produced in the 80s. Too much reverb on the snare, all this stuff. Well, that's just a detail, you know. Like, for us, the banjo in a song is more or less a detail as far as writing the song. We put so much effort and emphasis on making songs that we're okay with singing every night for possibly decades. So everything else really just needs to fall in line with that. We love the sound of the banjo. It made sense for Scott to start playing it at some point in his life, and that it has ended up becoming part of a more or less a cultural moment in popular music is hilarious in a way. Because when we started, I mean, we would have never believed that would have ever been possible.
Right.
But there's an honesty in acoustic instruments that will remain long after we're gone and has existed long before we were born. And we've been lucky to tap into that a little bit and be able to connect with folks through that aesthetic. But again, I feel like production value, what we're dressed like, you know, some of the instrument choices, a lot of that will kind of fall away in generations to come when they look back and say, well, was that a quality song or not? I'm not sure if I answered the question there, Jim, but I feel like we sort of fell into it a little bit as far as its cultural implications and impact. But it's a fun place to be and an exciting place to be.
Oh, excellent. And you answered it just fine. Thank
cool,
you.
Cool.
We're KCSN. I got one last question for you guys. You've been so gracious and generous to spend some time with us before your show tonight. And I know you've got a lot of other stuff going on, too. Among other things, Scott, you've got a Rolling Stone writer out here on the road with you. And back in my days as a professional music writer, I had a chance to be that writer who shadowed a band for a couple of different times. I'm curious what that's like from your point of view to have a writer sort of, you know, tagging along with you for a few days to write an article. You got to watch what you say, be careful, or is it all good, or how's that work out?
Of course, you try not to watch what you say too much, but there's plenty of things you don't want written anywhere. And
we haven't done that a lot.
No, we really haven't. No. I may not have thought about this a whole lot. I do think a lot about liabilities, and so I certainly, I really don't know what to say there. I think it's important for us to be as natural as we can be, because anything that is written about us, is it needs to be as clear as it can be, and I think that's good. I think that's healthy. But if there's things that we don't want to be known or heard, then we just need to hide. You know, I just need to get out of the way and
seems logical.
And just tuck ourselves into the shadow, and I think that's appropriate, you know. And we're honored that Patrick from Rolling Stone would come out and care to speak with us and converse with us and hear our stories. We certainly do. Once they get us started, we do enjoy talking. That's part of what we do and why we're where we're at. So it's quite an honor, and we're thankful for it.
Well, we look forward to reading that article when it comes out in Rolling Stone soon. I'm Jim Nelson. We're 88.5 KCSN. I want to thank Scott and Seth and Bob and Joe for spending some time backstage at the Shrine Auditorium with us. And best wishes to you guys.
Thank
and
you,
we'll
Jim.
Keep right on playing the Avett Brothers on KCSN.
Wonderful.
Thank you guys. Have a great
thank
time.
You. Thank
we
you,
appreciate
Jim.
It. Thank you.
You.